Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Confounding, exhilarating, and contagious. Emotions matter, and so does applying emotional intelligence. Welcome to Dan Hill's EQ Spotlight, the podcast where emotions rule. Whatever the topic, how do hearts and minds collide? Find out with your host, a college professor turned globe-trotting EQ entrepreneur. His mission? Each week, Dan joins prominent authors in decoding how emotions drive outcomes and make people tick. Now, on to the show.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me for the 77th episode of my podcast, Dan Hill's EQ Spotlight. The series appears here on the New Books Network, which has as its motto, sharing knowledge so people can thrive. Today's topic is using love, power, and justice to solve tough problems. I'm joined by Adam Kahane. He is the author of Facilitating Breakthrough, How to Remove Obstacles, Bridge Differences, and Move Forward Together. The publisher is Barrett Kohler Publishers. Adam is the director of Rios Partners, an international social enterprise that helps people move forward together on their most important and intractable issues. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, well, let's plug in Jen. What's the overview you can offer us of the book?
Well, the book starts from the premise that to deal with the issues we have to deal with in our organizations and communities and world, we need more and better collaboration. We have to find ways to work together, including with people we don't agree with or like or trust. And to do that, we need more and better facilitation. So the book offers a bigger and broader vision of the role that facilitation can play in moving forward together.
Okay, and you've had really a broad range of ways in which you've applied your skills and what the book is about. I think listeners will be intrigued to know a bit about all the different instances where you've got to practice your craft. Can you tell us a few of those?
Well, I got started in this kind of work 30 years ago when I was invited to be a facilitator for a series of meetings in South Africa of people who were trying to figure out how to end apartheid and move to democracy. And the interesting thing is that the group that had been assembled wasn't people from one organization or faction. It was representatives of the whole system, which in the South African case meant black and white, opposition and establishment, left and right, politicians, business people, trade unionists, community leaders. And that experience that it is possible for people to work together, even if they don't agree with or like or trust each other, is was the hinge in my life. And that's what I've been doing all day, every day, in the 30 years since. And I've done that, all over the world in all kinds of contexts on big issues, small issues, in the U.S., in Mexico, in Japan, in India, in Colombia during the Civil War, recently in Myanmar, et cetera, et cetera. And the common theme is there's people who need to work together if they're going to deal with what they're trying to deal with, whether it's people in the same organization or in the same community or in the same country. They may not want to work together, but they need to work together. And so what I've had to figure out through lots of trial and lots of error is, how do you do that?
Sure. Well, talk about living a remarkable life, a meaningful life. I think you've accomplished that, and congratulations to you. I think really on behalf of everyone in this world, because we do need to figure out ways to collaborate more effectively. And in fact, the title of one of your books is called Collaborating with the Enemy. So obviously there's a lot of tension in most of these meetings, and the other one's called Solving Tough Problems. So you haven't chosen a path that comes without any nerves involved. Can you tell us about the other two books briefly and how this one is different from them?
Well, I just want to say that I haven't chosen a path that's not without challenges, but I think that there's nothing more rewarding in life than doing something you're good at that makes a difference. So I don't consider it a hardship at all. The Solving Tough Problems was my first book. I thought that this work was essentially all about opening up and connecting to others and connecting to the situation more deeply, what I've come to call love. And now I think that that's part of the story, but really only part of it. We'll get into that later. Collaborating with the Enemy was about this principle that I've mentioned, that sometimes we have to work with people we don't agree with or like or trust. We may not want to, but otherwise we can't move forward. And this new book is on the same subject, but it takes another angle, which is not the general principle of collaboration, but very specifically, and even you could say technically, what is it that a facilitator has to do? And by facilitator, I mean anyone at all who's trying to help people move forward together, whether they're group leaders or group members or executives or consultants or friends or coaches. But what does it take as a facilitator? What do you have to do? So that's what this new book's about.
Okay. And we'll come to that, those specifics in a moment here, but I'd like to just broaden it a little bit to bring in, I think we're a pretty seminal figure for you, which is Paul Tillich. He's in fact published a book called Love, Power, and Justice, and those are three very important terms. Can you maybe delineate for us what each means and how they together form a rubric that allows you to do the work you do?
Yeah, I happened upon this book by Paul Tillich, which has the title you mentioned. I didn't know about him. He was a famous German-American Protestant existential theologian. I wouldn't say I'm really into German-American Protestant existential theology. It's not really my thing. But the reason I've come back to that book over and over is that the definitions he offers of these words, power, love, and justice, fit exactly with my experience of these phenomena. So I'm using his definitions, which are a little unusual, because I think they explain what I'm noticing and working with in the work I do. He defines love as the drive to unite the separated. And anytime you have a meeting or a project that involves people who haven't been working together and are now in the same room or on the same video call, then you're making a love move, at least to begin with. You're bringing together, you're uniting what has been separated. And implicit in Tillich's definition of love is there is a wholeness that exists, but which has been shattered, kind of like a mirror that is shattered into a bunch of pieces. So that's a big deal in my work, collaboration, especially amongst people who aren't used to working together, of which the extreme case was apartheid South Africa, where people had been legally separated, not allowed to even be in the same room. That's what Tillich calls love. And that's where I started. But the way I got to Tillich is that one of his most famous students was Martin Luther King Jr., and King, quoting Tillich or referring to Tillich, said that power without love is reckless and abusive, and love without power is sentimental and anemic. So this is what got me to Tillich and to Tillich's definition of power, which is the drive of everything living to realize itself. It's more like the Spanish poder, you know, the capacity to get things done. And what I realized is that literally nothing happens without power. You can connect people, you can bring them together as much as you want, but if there's no drive to self-realization of the individual or of the organization or of the group, literally nothing's going to happen. And we all know what power without love produces. Yep. Recklessness and abuse at best, genocide at worst. And but this pair of words shows that the equal danger, maybe even the worst danger, because it's so easy to overlook. Love without power, sentimental, anemic at best, and at worst, cynically reproducing of the status quo. But I always wondered, what did Tillich mean, or actually King as well, by adding the word justice to this? And it's harder to make out. But the way I understand it is, justice is the structure or the form or the system that allows power and love to be exercised, and in particular, prevents the power of some from extinguishing the power of others, like kneeling on somebody's neck, if you want a graphic example of what injustice looks like. So anyway, to make a long story short, a very long story, very short, my understanding of the essence of facilitation, of helping people work together, is unblocking not one, not two, but all three of these intrinsic drives, the drive to love, the drive to power, and the drive to justice.
Well, speaking of power, I remember one point in the book, I think there's the quip, you know, oh, sure, I can show you a 5-point plan, and that's my fist,
yeah,
bunched together. Because when I started reading in the section in the book about love and power, I thought actually of the two principal emotions, the two approach emotions of happiness and anger. Because as with love and happiness, you are embracing, you are opening yourself up to the occasion. And yet anger, although it's often called a negative emotion, has a constructive purpose. You are trying to make progress. You are trying to have some control of your destiny. You're trying to break through barriers and get to a different place. So used well, both of those emotions, which are very predominant in people, I would say on average in my studies over the past 20 years, those two emotions account for about 70% of the average person's emoting. So they are really huge factors. And if you can harness both of them, you know, within the constraints of applying or allowing for or enabling justice, that's very powerful. There's another construct here, which I think is also important. You talk about the vertical versus the horizontal. And I think it's worth taking time to establish that. Do you mind offering some words on that front?
Yeah. So as I try to unpack how do you facilitate, how do you help people collaborate, how do you help people move forward together, I realize that the most common approach to facilitation, the one in most of the textbooks, the way most facilitators try to do this, is what I call vertical, which means there's a hierarchy. Which means the higher over the lower, the boss over the subordinate, or the expert over the people who aren't experts. But more fundamentally, it's the hierarchy of the larger over the smaller. So the way this shows up in facilitation is when the facilitator says, yes, yes, I know that you think this is important, or I know that this is important to you, but can we think of the good of the whole? Of the organization or of the community of the country. There's nothing wrong with that. It works well. But it really has a limit. And what's good about it is it produces unity, coordination, but the limit is that it shuts down dissent and important contributions and important interests, and therefore often leads to people saying yes, I'll go along, but not really going along, and so sabotaging or not actually implementing what is agreed. So that's the most common approach to facilitation. There's another common approach, which is the opposite. I call it the horizontal, and a lot of facilitators use it. It's basically rejecting the hierarchy and saying the crucial thing in working together is that everybody's equal, and therefore everybody's going to do, going to think what they want to think, and do what they want to do. That's also powerful. It allows for diversity and agency, but the downside of horizontality is we often end up with fragmentation or polarization or stuckness. And so when I realized that the most common ways of facilitating are what I call the vertical approach and the horizontal approach, I started to wonder what would be a way of escaping from those two poles in how to facilitate. And that's what I call transformative facilitation.
Okay, and then let's go ahead and jump into the specifics. How have you devised a way to escape those two poles and get to something else?
Well, I've been very influenced by a wonderful writer on polarities in general, whose name is Barry Johnson. And he points out that often when there's two poles, the mistake is to think we have to choose one or the other. And he has a beautiful counterexample, which is the poles of inhaling and exhaling.
Sure.
People don't get into big arguments about is inhaling better or exhaling better. We got to do both. We don't do them at the same time. First we inhale, and after a while we have to exhale, and after we've exhaled for a while we have to inhale. And the healthy, productive way of dealing with these poles is to use them both, not compromise between them, not sort of inhale, sort of exhale, but to do them both alternately. And in essence, this is what I think transformative facilitation is. It says don't choose vertical or horizontal. That would be an error that leads us to a dead end, leads us to stuckness. The essence of transformative facilitation is moving back and forth between the vertical and horizontal. Getting good at both of them and doing them alternately as needed.
Okay, and you have a lot of very specific things that you've devised over the years, you know, exercises, things to try out. I'm thinking about the shift from plenary sessions to small group sessions, the use of sticky notes, even toy bricks, paired walks, 1-minute introductions, etc. Maybe a couple of those that you could, you know, given the limits of time, might want to elucidate a bit or say why they are so magical in helping get to the kind of chemistry you need?
The role of the facilitator is, by definition, is not to do the work for people, but to help them work together, to provide a structure that enables them to exercise power and love with justice. And so the examples you've given are structures. So, for example, to take the simplest example, which is one you mentioned, if we're a new group and we're introduce ourselves and everybody's got 1 minute sitting in a circle, then that's a very specific structure. You could say even quite a rigid structure, but it has a lot of things embedded in it. First of all, that we want to hear from everybody. That everybody's voice is equally important. The worker and the president the peasant and the CEO are equally important, that we need everybody's contribution, and we're connected, sitting in a circle where everybody can see everybody and hear from everybody. So that's an example. But let me say this in a different way, because all of these techniques are examples. I'm happy to talk about more of them if any of them are of interest. But they're all examples of something which is really simple but really not easy, which is, as a facilitator, you only have to do 10 things, which I explain in the book. It's like a vocabulary that only has 10 words. So it's pretty simple.
Sure. Okay.
But the challenge is they don't need to be used in any predetermined rhythm. We have to use each exactly when it's needed. And that's the part that's not easy.
And I assume you're referring to some words like direct and accompany and conclude and advance, or
yes,
actually
exactly.
10 different words.
Okay. Exactly. Those are the 10 things you need to do to facilitate are the ones you mentioned. Inquiring and advocating, advancing and concluding, discovering and mapping, accompanying and directing, and standing inside and standing outside. So it's pretty simple. It's only 10 things. But when you have to do them, that depends above all on, well, what's happening right now and what does the group need to do in order to be able to advance.
Sure, and adjusting the moment. I love the analogy was made to being an orchestra director. But one also has to remember that you didn't compose the piece, most likely, and you do need to get the best out of everybody and ultimately accept that yours is a facilitating role as opposed to the dominant role. Speaking of dominant, it would strike me that given the vertical versus the horizontal, in a company setting where the CEO is accustomed to having the power and yes, they inhale, they exhale, but they also exhale giving lots of directions and commands, that it can be maybe particularly difficult to move them beyond a vertical approach. How do you do that? Is my assumption correct? Anything you'd like to say about this in a business setting?
Yes. So for people in positions of authority, like CEOs, like me in many contexts, a very comfortable default is the vertical. Or you could go further than that. A comfortable default is forcing. Okay, I've listened to all of you, but we're going to do it this way. And yep. I'm not saying that's never a good idea. I'm just saying it has limits. And there are times, maybe lots of times, maybe more times than there used to be, where the boss, however powerful or smart he or she is, can't fix it by themselves or can't fix it just by telling people what to do. In those circumstances, which is not all circumstances, we need collaboration. And that involves also the horizontal, also the principle of equality. And I think one way to imagine this in an organization is to do this alternating back and forth between the vertical and horizontal. By thinking, okay, well, some of the time we're going to use the vertical. The bosses are going to make decisions. People are going to direct their subordinates. But there's other times when we're going to take off our hats. We're going to suspend our authority and engage everybody horizontally. Not compromising between the vertical and horizontal, but alternating back and forth. And so I've seen companies that have two kinds of meetings. Imagine two kinds of rooms. The rooms where we're gonna act vertically and rooms or meetings where we're gonna act horizontally. They have different ground rules. And that's how we get the best of both worlds. Rather than just sort of compromising or pretending, I'm gonna pretend this is a horizontal meeting where everybody's voice is welcome and everybody's contribution is needed. But if you say anything I don't like, I'm going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. So that's what I'm trying to avoid. That's what King refers to as love without power is sentimental and anemic. How do you get the best of both?
Sure. Well, I just recently saw an excerpt from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Lou says to Mary at one point, "If you don't like me, you're fired. And if I don't like you, you're fired." And it very much establishes you're in a vertical relationship. One of the things I liked about the book is, you know, very often as I'm reading these, particularly when they're business books, everyone is, I guess I just have to admit it, they can be a bit crowing as to all their accomplishments and nothing goes wrong seemingly. And yet this book is humble because you offer an instance in Manitoba involving the First Nations and sessions that didn't go that smoothly. And maybe in part because my family's from North Dakota and it abutted an Indian reservation, and I've spent time with the Sioux in particular. I was interested in you offering up to listeners, Lou, about that session and why it was a bit more difficult and probably what your learnings were from it.
Yeah, I'll do so. It was a very impactful event for me. But let me just say before that I think almost everything I've learned has been through failure, that I think things are one way and I act accordingly, and I find myself running into a brick wall and I eventually pick myself up and wonder what happened, what am I not understanding? So I think actually there's probably 20 times in the book where I talk about, I thought it was one way and it isn't, and here's how I now understand this. But yes, the example in Manitoba was particularly dramatic because I worked all over the world, and coming back to Canada, I thought I knew how things were and what needed to be done, and that I was a big international expert. And and in that particular occasion, which was a workshop involving a bunch of First Nations working on population health issues in Manitoba, George Moosewagon, who is one of the leaders of the group, said to me right at the beginning of the meeting that he didn't trust me. And this, that was difficult. And I thought I got scared and I got tense and I thought I was going to be kicked out and I was going to lose the contract. And so that experience, of thinking I knew what needed to be done and thinking that I was from outside and would be respected because I was from outside, and finding that wasn't so, was a very big learning in the following sense, that it was because I was acting as not just as a know-it-all, but as a know-it-all outsider, that George said he didn't trust me. And what he wanted me to understand, and I did, he knocked me hard enough on the head, I normally get it, was that, no, Adam, you're not an outsider.
He referred to you as a settler at one point, I believe.
Yeah, well, just like whites in South Africa, where I had my first experience, were called settlers, so are non-Indigenous people in Canada. And so what he wanted me to understand is I wasn't apart from, outside of the situation we were working with. I was part of it, and I needed to act accordingly, which I did. And things went quite well eventually, not just with the participants, but with the team of facilitators that included both First Nations and settler facilitators. So in a way, that's the reason that's the last chapter in the book, is because that's the most fundamental point of all. If you're trying to help make things better, the most fundamental question is, do you see yourself only apart from or also part of the situation? It's like the person who calls home from their car and says, I'm going to be late because I'm in traffic, versus I'm going to be late because I am traffic. Yeah. So anyway, that's the last of the five polarities, having to both stand outside and stand inside. So that's the exhaling and inhaling of the fifth point.
Sure. No, I thought it was very powerful and a nice way to conclude the book. And I thought it played nicely on an earlier quote you have from Dwight Eisenhower, the former president, who says, plans are worthless, but planning is everything. because the experiences will leave you humble and they'll remind you of the need to be adaptive to the circumstances you suddenly find yourself in. So I want to thank you, Adam, so much for being on the program. This has been episode number 77 of Dan Hill's EQ Spotlight. My guest, Adam Kahane. He is the author of a very important book called Facilitating Breakthrough: How to Remove Obstacles, Bridge Differences, and Move Forward Together. If you enjoyed today's show, please give it a rating or review on iTunes. You can find other episodes by going to my company's website at the obligatory 3ws.sensorylogic.com, or go to the New Books Network, type in the show's name, and you'll find the other guests I've had over the past year and change. Finally, I'd like to conclude every episode with an epigram. In this case, I reached out for one from Roseanne Cash, who said, "The key to change is to let go of fear." Until next time, be kind and stay safe.